The next speaker is Stan Greshner with Grid Alternatives. Stan is the Vice President of Government Relations and Market Development at Grid Alternatives, where he leads state and federal regulatory and government engagement. He directed the nation's first low-income solar incentive program in California, the Single-Family Affordable Housing Affordable Solar Homes Program, or SASH, and he helped co-author the low-income solar guide that that Sean just talked about. So tell us what Grid Alternatives has been doing on the ground in this area, Stan.
Great. Can you see my slides, Victoria?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thanks again to the EPA for hosting this discussion and amplifying the importance and the message that all of our communities can and should be participating in our country's clean energy transition. And, you know, it's an issue and an agenda that I've personally been advocating for the past 8 years, and was really inspired by the list of participants in today's webinar and, you know, their indicated intent to find resources and solutions to move the low-income solar conversation and agenda forward in their community. So thank you again for hosting this discussion. So I'll be talking a bit about Grid Alternatives' work in this space and the work we've done on advocating for policies, developing localized programs and implementing programs in different parts of the country. Our vision as an organization is a successful transition to clean renewable energy that includes everyone. And at Grid, we focus on, you know, promoting policies and programs that bring the clean energy economy to the unserved and underserved markets. And our focus is on specifically on the low-income families and communities. But it's through that framing that we pursue policies and programs that provide more equitable access to solar jobs, and to the clean energy economy, but also we feel advances solutions that benefit the broader solar industry, the general market, and just providing new opportunities for everyone to go solar, especially through our work in community solar and our work on programs that, you know, multi-tenant housing and renters can benefit from, which covers both often the affordable housing side and, you know, certainly has parallels to the general market side. So Grid Alternatives, just some background on who we are. We're the country's largest nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit solar installer. We have offices serving the entire state of California, Colorado, the New York Tri-State region through a New York-based office, and the Mid-Atlantic region through a Washington, D.C.-based office. And the model that we use to install solar is a workforce development model where our professional staff, we have job trainees coming out from the local community and local community and members working under our professional staff to learn about solar installation on the ground. And it's a great opportunity for students to get out of the classroom where they're getting great instructional work and learning electric code and soft skills training. But gives them the hands-on experience that, you know, if they're looking to pursue a career in solar installation, that the solar industry is often looking for when they're hiring, which is, you know, having some hands-on training. I'll talk a little bit more about those opportunities a bit later. We cover all different types of housing and installations. We focus on single-family homes, multifamily, affordable housing, and, of course, as Sean was noting, community solar is growing in the country, and we've developed some of the first low-income community solar projects. And it's worth noting here that, you know, on the multifamily housing side, we actually just announced yesterday a national technical assistance program in partnership with the funding partnership with the JPB Foundation to provide affordable housing owners anywhere in the country some technical assistance on solar and looking at their portfolios, housing portfolios, to do basic solar site assessments, just so housing owners can understand the solar potential of their portfolios and can kind of be the foundation and baseline for them to take the next step to install more solar on their properties. And again, our intent there is, you know, we're not going to build it all, but much of it, but we want to help build the market and build that market segment and have an educated customer base where they're confident moving forward in their conversations about going solar. And I don't spend much time here, but just some stats. We've installed over 6,600 systems, over 22 megawatts of solar, all 100% of that is benefiting low-income families. We've had over 25,000 individuals who have passed through our workforce program, either coming in for educational training or up on the roof getting hands-on training. And a few years ago, the White House recognized our efforts in this space as a champion of change. Our workforce development model, it's when we talk about Solar for All, the framing and title of this webinar, we like to think and advocate for programs and policies that can be as holistic as possible, you know, for low-income families. For us, it's not just about getting solar up on a family's roof. It's also bringing the jobs opportunities to those communities who often, you know, are in need of new opportunities for employment. And it's working with, you know, the energy efficiency providers in the state that often do low-income weatherization and provide those free services. And how do we create programming? How do we offer a holistic solution is more than just, you know, getting panels, solar panels up on a roof. And so workforce development was, again, it was the model that GRID was built on, but it was a model that we've seen incorporated into policies and programs and have been successfully implemented. In Sean's presentation, he talked about this as one of those opportunities to include in specifically low-income solar type policies and programs. Building off some of those models that have been implemented in California and in other places, we found ourselves at the center of a lot of job training organizations, and we have, you know, 70-plus job training partners and solar industry partners who are looking for great folks to hire. And so last year we launched a national resume bank specifically for our, I think, job training partners and the solar industry and their HR departments to connect job trainees to solar jobs. That is an initiative that we're continuing to expand and build out. And last year we also initiated a RISE initiative, which is Realizing an Inclusive Solar Economy. And this has really been a focus of the solar industry as well. GRID Alternatives is in a lead position here, and we partnered with SunEdison on this initial initiative. But, you know, the intent is to get the entire solar industry focusing on expanding the diversity in our companies, and it has been embraced by SEIA. All of the solar companies that are members of SEIA, and it's, you know, we've hosted job fairs, you know, throughout the states that we operate, and have been really putting a lot of positive and resources and programming into this space. So we're proud of the work that the industry and GRID's role in that space as well. And, you know, we've seen in many of the successful programs that have been implemented throughout the country is that this is, you know, Sean had noted the many different types of barriers. Marketing, outreach, you know, is one of those big barriers, and there are a lot of great community-based organizations who are trusted partners in the community, who are advocates of renewable energy, of clean energy, of energy efficiency, who need to be part of the solution. It's not just a, you know, I don't think it can just be, you know, the solar industry pushing this agenda. And we have found in our own work that we're most successful in partnering with these different organizations to deliver the services. And so the different types of entities that should be part of your conversations, if you're looking for solutions and advocates and those that the different types of stakeholders in the conversations we've had, it's, you know, the community colleges and job training organizations, affordable housing providers, those are cities, public housing agencies, those are nonprofits, affordable housing owners, and of course the weatherization and the energy efficiency networks in the state, of course the solar industry, utilities are a key and central partner in any of the programs that are successful. So of course they're a strong partner, and local governments also can bring their own unique solutions to this space that, you know, if there's challenges at the state level or at a broader level, you know, local governments are also a great place to focus efforts. So just a couple of case studies to look at and how their programs overcame, you know, some of the barriers and challenges that Sean outlined. You know, California, I think was a great, obviously a great one to highlight. They're often highlighted in with anything related to solar, but I think low income, you know, is the first state and to adopt a dedicated low income solar program. And they did this back in 2006 when they created the $2.2 billion California Solar Initiative Program. You know, there was a separate bill that said, you know, 10% of those funds that we're dedicating to building a solar economy in California must be dedicated to developing the right programs to encourage low-income families to benefit from, you know, our state's investment in this effort. And, you know, that created the single-family affordable solar homes program and the multifamily affordable solar housing program, the SASH and MASH programs, which were refunded back in 2013 with an additional $108 million. So there's over $300 million that have been dedicated to these two programs alone in California, and they run through 2021. And the SASH program is interesting in the program design side. It wasn't legislated, but it was on what came out of the PUC and you know, which involved many stakeholders providing comments on how that program should, what that should look like and how it should roll out. And it became a very comprehensive package that, you know, we were just talking about, that Sean had talked about, you know, that opportunity to think more holistically about the policy and program that's being implemented. And that it was about getting solar on low-income families' roofs. It was about, you know, it was about job training, so workforce development was incorporated directly into the program design, and it had energy efficiency components in there where all of the solar customers were also enrolled in the utilities free weatherization program that they offered to low-income families. And, you know, the barriers that these programs addressed was, you know, certainly the funding barrier that Sean talked about and that everyone recognized in the poll as being, you know, one or two in that poll, that having long-term sustained financing is absolutely necessary for creating a longer-term market, low-income market segment for, you know, which provides the time frame for, you know, the innovative delivery models and financing models to be created and mature over time, so that low-income communities and families continue to have access going forward. I'm not a huge fan of just the pilot program. Pilots are certainly worthwhile and often necessary, but it's a short-term solution. It's you know, jumping in and then jumping out, and it doesn't provide the time frame or financing to really allow the, you know, a sustained market, long-term solar market to develop. But California wanted that to happen, and they put the resources and time frame behind it. And then I'll just note that a few other policies that California recently passed is SB 535, which takes 25% of the cap and trade revenues. And these are all, this is separate from the California Solar Initiative. But 25% of those revenues must be invested, must benefit disadvantaged communities. 10% of the overall pool of funding must also be located in disadvantaged communities. And of course, solar is a key part of that program. And then last year, the state, California, we passed AB 693, which invests up to $100 million per year over the next 10 years, so up to $1 billion total for solar projects on multifamily affordable. And I think, you know, the takeaway here is that, and what we advocate for is any discussion that's happening around solar, whether it's community solar programs or just a general market, or how do we increase solar in our state or in our community, that low income should not be an afterthought of these conversations, low income access. It should be integral and part of every single solar conversation. And the model and mechanism might not work for all, in all cases, but you know, that it's those, that market segment should be represented and thoughtfully considered, I would say, in any type of solar discussion. And you know, California has done that in a lot of different ways. And Washington, D.C., similar to California, it's an incentive program. It's a differential incentive for low-income families, higher incentive. It is a program that is funded through the District Department of Energy and Environment, and the Sustainable Energy Utility is the administrator of that program. And it's been operating for 4+ years and refunded annually. And, you know, again, they've overcome some of these barriers, again, that Sean addressed in terms of having long-term, I think, scaled financing for, you know, to scale projects and to allow the market to develop the right models, delivery models, and financing solutions to, you know, hopefully continue to benefit low-income families. They, of course, had the differential incentive. And, you know, we had the director of, you know, Sean noted that we worked together on the low-income solar policy guide. As part of that, we did a launch event in Washington, D.C., and actually the director of the DOEE came up, Tommy Wells came out, and he noted that workforce development, you know, is not an aspirational component of their program, but is one of the cornerstones of this program and one of the key performance indicators that you know, the administrator is being evaluated on, and has been you know, integrated from day one into their program. And you know, it's another example of that. And, you know, often when the workforce development discussion happens, you know, there are you know, some logical, I think, arguments that folks put out against it, and, you know, it increases costs, and maybe this or that. But we've seen if it's required, people do it. You know, companies do it. Models develop to ensure that that happens. So, you know, if you're at the beginning stages of conversations in, you know, your communities and your in your state, you know, we would say there's a lot of examples of, you know, where you can successfully do this and point to successful examples. And finally, you know, Sean wrapped up with community solar. I will here as well. You know, community solar is, I think, just represents a huge opportunity for the industry in a lot of different ways. It is the, you know, as Sean noted, the vast majority of households do not have, cannot put solar on a roof. And so community solar overcomes that one obstacle, whether it's a bad roof, don't own the roof, shading, you can potentially still be a solar customer, you know, through the community solar model. I would note that all other barriers typically still exist. You know, we've heard community solar conversations, you know, that, you know, if we just do community solar, low-income families will be, you know, we've addressed that issue. Well, you don't, unless there's still a financing model that have to be developed. Low-income families still can't, you know, shell out, you know, money to purchase panels in that system. Their credit scores are still, you know, still bad. So how are, you know, how do you get around, you know, so PPA models and with community solar are have unique challenges as well. So there are still solutions that can be developed here, and of course we think there are, this is a huge opportunity throughout the country going forward. So, you know, we started developing, having these conversations years ago in Colorado, where, you know, Colorado has been a leading state in the community solar area. And we've been working with them since day one on their program, since it required 5% set aside for low income participation, and worked with their PUC many years ago and helping understand what potential options for meeting that mandate could be. And last year we developed our first of its kind in the nation, 100% low-income community solar project with a rural electric co-op, Grand Valley Power. We just broke ground yesterday on another community solar project in the state with another partner, and we'll be doing a half dozen more this year. But, you know, again, all of the elements that we've talked about on the rooftop side, the workforce development component was integrated into it, ensuring customers have day one savings and net metering on the system. We partnered with local partners on the ground to identify clients and engage the broader community-based organizations in the community, and actually had, I think,
Stan,
initial families come out and sign their panels. So it was a great, great project. And I'll close there.
Stan, I'm really sorry. I'm worried we're not going to have time for Peter and the questions. Oh. So if you can wrap up, that would be great. Thank you.
Yes, that's fine. And the key takeaways are a repeat of what Sean said, just the type of element that we need to focus on. So, again, thank you all for your time.
Thanks, Stan, and I wish we had more time for all of you to speak because you had a great presentation, especially focusing on some of the co-benefits. It's for the EPA and other groups like yourselves, we're interested in not just helping low-income folks save money, but increase their job opportunities and improve the safety and health of their home. So your examples are a great way to show how that can be done. So we have one more speaker, and I think we'll do a quick poll question. This is so if you could please participate. The question is, which of the following benefits most motivates you in your community or organization to adopt low-income solar? Is it to increase equitable solar access, to improve job creation and training, to bring economic benefits, to bring environmental benefits such as climate change mitigation, or environmental justice? Please select one if you can. Thank you. Okay, let's pull up the results, please. We have the majority of folks selecting increasing equitable solar access, but not far behind that is environmental justice at 22%, and economic benefit and environmental benefit are about equal. The job creation and training is the lowest. Perhaps that's because that's the hardest thing to do, possibly. So thanks for your answers.